fireworks in the air. Presumably, the Giants have defeated the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 42.
We're waiting for confirmation on that. I've still got 1 second here on Yahoo. Can you reload or
I'm pulling it up. I'm pulling it up right now.
Well, leave that alone and go to the computer.
The Giants have won.
Is it? Yeah, yeah.
This is from the Associated Press. Perfect. No more. The headline: Eli Manning and the New York Giants, rather, pulled off a stunning 17-14 upset of New England Sunday night in the Super Bowl, spoiling the Patriots' shot at a perfect season. That from the Associated Press. The Dateline Glendale, Arizona, the home of Super Bowl 42. The Giants have won. Now we resume normal programming.
The Giants win the pennant! The Giants win it! They win the Super Bowl! They won it all, ladies and gentlemen. All the marbles.
There's nothing like hearing the game on a time delay from a couple of people who know not of what they're speaking.
Exactly.
That's GBB in an essence.
We have a croquet score.
Please tell me that. I'm actually more impressed by croquet.
Seriously, ladies and gentlemen, congratulations to the New York Giants. Nobody thought they would pull this. I mean, nobody even thought they'd make the playoffs halfway through the season. Here they were. They came on strong. They just got better and better week after week at the very end of the season and into the playoffs. And they've defeated the Patriots, who had been 18-0 until this game. What an upset.
The first touchdown of the game. Now come all the stats that I still couldn't really figure out. An 83-yard drive by David Tyree, who scored the first touchdown in the game for the Giants. It was conventional wisdom that the Patriots would win, not only because they were undefeated the entire season, but also because they had control up until about 35 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Then the Giants had control. The Giants kept control.
Until
1 second remaining, they scored. It's over 17-14.
Oh, well, what happened then? New England did get the ball back with about 20 seconds left or something like that, and they couldn't. The Giants, I think they took a penalty because last I had heard they were on their own 16-yard line. It was 4th and 20, and they couldn't do anything. The Giants took the ball back, sat on it for one play, and that was the end of the game. Congratulations.
Tom Brady, the league's MVP of the Patriots, of course.
Uh-huh.
Pretty impressive guy, actually, if you
Well, impressive girlfriend, anyway, yeah.
That's true. he was battered all game, sacked 5 times, hurried a dozen more, I'm not too sure what that means, and at one point wound up on his knees.
Whoa.
This happened to you too, Dave. His hand on his hips following one of many poor throws. So the AP is basically saying Tom Brady screwed up the game. That's essentially
They're saying is that the Giant defense
was
tore
better,
him
but,
into knots.
You know, Tom Brady, who was before this game, basically a demigod, screwed it up for the Patriots. So Tom Brady now, the most hated man in New England. Eli Manning
is going to be...
Can now do no wrong in the state of New York.
No, this was... Well, yes, but it's not just the Giants quarterback. They only scored... It was a 17-14 game. That's a game that's all about the defense. The Giant defense just shut the Patriots down. That's what this was all about. Not saying that Eli Manning didn't do a good job, not having seen the game. And by the way, if anybody wants to call in and say hurrah or shoot off firecrackers into the telephone...
if you would like to light an M80 into the building, by all means...
No, let's not have that.
Fine. Dave, then put down your lighter.
Okay, sorry.
I just need a prop.
Yeah, pretty
much. It gives the illusion that there's actually news going on around here when in reality it's just reading off a computer screen.
Pretty much, yeah.
Someone else has to work for us.
Isn't that what you do on your other job?
No, I actually...
No, I'm not talking... I'm talking like across the hall.
Yeah, I know. I actually do work there. I actually do.
Well, how do you gather news? You write it up, but you write it just from other sources.
Newspapers,
yeah.
News media, the local channels.
But you're not actually reporting. You're not digging up news on your own. You're rewriting other people's news.
Who the F does that on Long Island?
Well, yeah. In the old days.
Donovan, give me a break.
Well, News 12.
Frank Brinker? News 12 is a crock! I don't use News 12 as a source.
At all?
Because they're terrible.
Why are they terrible?
Because their coverage is incomplete, and I hate them all.
Okay, but if their coverage is incomplete...
News 12, give us a call. I'm Dennis.
If News 12 coverage is incomplete, how complete can your coverage be if you're only relying on...
Dave, don't insult me. I work 5 days a week, and I get paid, so back off, pal!
All right. Oh, yeah, that's true. You do work at the other place 5 days a week. That's pretty cool.
Technically 4 days a week. I'm not there Fridays anymore because I'm at Sirius on Fridays.
Oh, that's right. Ooh, satellite radio.
Ooh. By the way, my grandfather just emailed me.
Really?
From Hopalong, Illinois, yes. We exchanged emails several times
at
a week.
10 o'clock at night?
What's it,
what is he wearing?
It's 9:20 their time.
Ask him.
No, I would not ask him that. And he writes nothing about the Giants, actually, responding
Are his nipples tingling?
I'm not going to respond to that. That's actually very insensitive. He's a war hero.
What does that have to do with his nipples tingling?
I'm defensive of my grandfather. He's the only family member I like.
Okay.
He's updating me on Grandma's medical condition.
So what's wrong?
She's doing good.
What is her condition?
She had a bit of a fall and cracked open her head.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, she had stitches and everything, but she's back to work. Nothing will stop this lady from working. She works in real estate.
Oh, well, there you go.
As,
So she doesn't actually have a job. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. From your eyebrows, I can tell.
I'm very defensive of
about your grandpa and Grammy. I know you love them very much, but what? So they're above humor? They can't
Yes, they are.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, well, excuse moi.
Yes.
Well, how old is Grammy and Grampy?
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
You're fired, Dave.
Yeah, thank
you've heard you. That many times in your career.
Can I just count the rings in their diapers?
No.
Sorry.
Now comes the awkward silence between the two of us.
No, there's never... There's no awkward silence.
No, there's plenty of awkward moments coming from you.
Awkward moments, but no silences.
The constant streaming of farting noises coming out of you.
Oh, that's...
And not just out of your rear end. Like, every orifice of your body makes some kind of weird noise.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's right. Here's one.
Oh, that takes me back. Peter, stop it.
That's not a Peter Fitzgerald noise. That's just a cork popping noise, like Fritz Feld used to do in all
Who?
Those old movies. You remember in like
Dave, I'm like 30 years younger than you.
What?
You're in your 50s, aren't you?
No.
60s?
Yes. So no, you come on, you've seen these where the guy, and it was on Columbo episodes, he was on a couple of times, another guy. He opened the wine and go like, "Oh, it's a magnificent wine." He pop his mouth with his hand like
I
that.
I don't remember that from Columbo.
Oh, well.
Are we talking about the same Columbo, the Peter Falk Columbo?
Yes. It was a very minor character in one or two episodes, but
I think
that was his specialty. He would always play the waiter. Vigo Scotti used to do it, too. Vigo Scotti would play the waiter in these high-class restaurants and bring over the bottle and say, "Oh, monsieur, I think you would find it." Well, he wouldn't say monsieur, but it would be a
Italian place. Well, no, I'm sure he would pronounce it monsieur.
But then he'd pop it. And then there was somebody named Fritz Feld who used to do it in movies 20 years before that.
Have you actually been to a fancy restaurant? They don't do that in fancy restaurants.
No, they don't. I've never seen anybody do it, except... Although I did have a relative who used to do it with a real finger. That was cool.
What?
Where you put the thumb in the side of your cheek, and you pop it out, and that makes a real popping noise. I cannot do that. I think one of my cousins can do that. But I can't... this is what it sounds like, but I just rip my cheek with my fingernail if I even try that. Does not feel good. But I do it the other way. I just slap my mouth with my hand. Yay, Giants!
Welcome to the end of radio, as we know it.
So what are you up to? How was
yours,
your week, Jeff, other than this amazing, exciting underdog Super Bowl win by the Giants?
Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I was sick.
Oh, you were sick the half the week? The whole week?
It was like, well, kind of last Sunday... I caught the cold, because I know who I caught it from.
Uh-huh.
Caught it from a big black man on the subway.
Really?
Yes.
Let's make this a racist edition.
Not
just a big man, but it had to be a big black man. Thanks,
Well, Charlie. He was humongous.
Yeah, okay.
How sharp did you
what way?
Please give us a call. 631-888-11.
No, it was a big guy.
Yeah.
What happened is, you ever do that... You know, I was standing by the door of the train because I was getting off of the next stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 42nd Street. And all of a sudden, and everyone was on and off the train. All of a sudden, I see this guy kind of running towards the train. So I figured I'd step back to let him on the train. You know?
Yeah.
Being the non-racist that I am.
Yeah,
God,
you are.
That's how I describe. That's was actually is on your resume when you go for jobs.
That's right. Justin, not a racist. Sorry. Yeah.
I should probably take my neo-Nazi fan club off my resume.
Probably.
Anyway, so I step back, figuring the guy would, walk in the door and pass me and goes past me, right?
Yeah.
Well, he did what I think is, the rudest thing you could ever do, because it's happened to me before.
He stands in the doorway?
You take a step back, and then he'll stand in front of you.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're, in my personal space, because I was holding the pole.
I beg your pardon.
What?
So let me get this. A big black man standing next to you, and you were holding
his pole.
I wasn't holding his pole. I was holding the pole on the subway.
Uh-huh.
And then he just stops right in front of me.
This doesn't make it any better.
Now, here's the thing that's sort of racist.
Uh-oh.
Oh, this is...
No, here's the racist part. Uh-huh. If I was racist, I would have been just so repulsed by the whole thing that a black man came and stood in front of me, I'd leave, right?
he came and stood in front of you, didn't he?
So not being,
you were holding the pole.
Racist, I sat there and I said, oh, okay, well, I guess he'll just be rude. He'll be a big, rude black man. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking at him.
Yeah.
And about the door's closed, and about 10 seconds later, I see him go, sniffles. He sniffles, you know, big time.
See him go sniffle.
And I'm saying, oh, God. I said, please, please don't give me a cold, you big black, you big, rude black man. And sure enough.
Let me recap this.
I take this opportunity to apologize to everyone in the whole wide world.
Let me see if I can recap this story. You're on the subway, and there's this big African-American guy coming toward you.
No. The door's open at 42nd Street. People got on, people got off. And
did you get off?
What?
No, okay, yeah.
Or on, for that matter.
Yeah, right.
And then I see someone who's coming towards the train. So I graciously step back to allow him to pass. Right.
Okay,
but
yeah.
No, he has to be rude and step. He just steps right inside the train and stops. I mean, literally 2 inches in front of me.
And he's got the sniffles. What?
Well, I didn't know that until the door closed, and then I realized he was in my space, I was in his space, and we were both sharing the same germs at the same time.
But did he cough on you, or is he just, you know?
He was sniffling.
All right. Well.
And then here's what's really weird.
Here's what's really... It's like the Aristocrats joke.
Yeah, right.
This is where it gets interesting.
Yeah. And then not wanting to feel like I was racist and, like, you know, after he sniffled, I figured, oh, my God, I want to get away from him.
Yeah.
But I didn't want him to think I was getting away from him because he was black.
Oh, God.
I wanted to get away from him because I thought he was sick.
Yeah.
So I stood there like an idiot. And just pointed my nose in other directions. I tried to breathe other people's air.
Oh, God. Well, you know what? By the time... You may actually... If he was sniffling like that, he was probably past the contagious point anyway. Maybe you caught it from someone else on that subway car.
I'm blaming it on him.
Okay. That's fine by me.
White devil.
I thought you were all... But you sounded better when we talked 2 days ago, though.
My God, what the hell was that?
What's
you
that?
Sounded better... When we talked 2 days ago, though,
well,
I thought you were over this.
Sometimes I cough and sometimes I don't cough.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I'm a little tired now.
Aw.
Had a big, long day.
He had a big, long day and a big, long pole.
No, I didn't say
and a black man came on
the train.
Don't
my big, long pole.
Oh, my God. What, Joe? Joe, you have a filthy... Filthy mind.
Joe is just dying to handle my big.
Well, now. Let's come on.
Please,
right?
Dude,
it's not 11 o'clock yet.
You gotta buy me dinner first, dude.
That's okay. I'll buy you dinner.
And then we'll talk.
Okay.
Ooh.
See now it's Dave's dating time.
Ew.
From a nautical mile of your heart, it's Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. One of the oldest stations in the country, and it looks it.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, twirling around at night.
Well, There goes the Damerhood. Welcome, everybody, on this victorious February 3rd, 2008, to the 258th edition of Dave's Gone By, this giant striding edition of the show on this big Super Bowl Sunday. If you haven't heard the news, the New York Giants pulled off one of the biggest upsets in all of Super Bowl history, beating the New England Patriots 17-14. I think that's pretty cool, even though I'm not a Giant fan. My guest co-host, Joe Salzone, doesn't care one whit or hoot about it.
I don't care.
however, my usual guest co-host, Jeff Goodman, watched the game, had a terrific time, and
is too tired to come down to the studio.
Well, yeah.
Well, I don't care about David. I just care about the game.
No one does.
You care about your team.
But I must also tell you, not only was it a great upset, but we all know the biggest upset in Super Bowl history was...
Your stomach?
No.
What was Jets over...
Jets over Baltimore, yeah. Super Bowl III.
Wasn't this one actually a bigger upset?
No.
Really?
No one gave the Jets a chance in Super Bowl III.
Yeah, okay, and knowing the Giant defense, I guess people did give... Everybody said if the Giant defense could hold them, the Giants had a shot.
It was an upset because they were going against the team that had the perfect record.
Yeah.
But I think New England got too full of themselves and expected it. And they expected to be handed it, and they weren't.
Well.
But the other thing I did want to say is, and it's so ironic now, because next week, you know, it's the Pro Bowl.
Oh, is that the college thing? I don't even follow any of that. But what about it?
Pro Bowl is like the all-star game.
Oh.
Of football.
Okay.
Where they have all of the like, quote-unquote, best players playing.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's only one Giant, if that's playing.
Go figure.
So the Super Bowl champions will
barely be
not
represented.
Be represented at the Pro Bowl.
Well, that also means it was such a team effort, which is kind of what it's all about.
Yeah.
What it ought to be all about. Anyway, what we're all about here on Dave's Gone By every Sunday night at 11 on WGBB is comedy, talk radio, music, interviews, all sorts of stuff, all rolled into one, all different a little bit every single week. And we are always brought to you by... Jeff, do you want to take the reins?
MortgagesRock.com.
Which tells you how to get mortgages and financing not only for yourself, but for your friends, for your coworkers. You get to be the broker, and of course, when you learn, you make the commission. It's all at the website, MortgagesRock.com.
And then, of course, there's Hewlett-Minuteman Press.
That's right.
The copy kings of Broadway.
Right. 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island.
Next to Loman Shoes.
Yeah. 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners on any job, big or small, at Hewlett-Minuteman Press. 569-5577 is their phone number, area code 516. Everybody should carry a pen or a pencil before the start of this show to make sure they can get these phone numbers. 569-5577 for Hewlett-Minuteman Press in Nassau County. And what's our other sponsor?
And that's Bible of Broadway.
Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. For 65 years... The Bible of Broadway, everything on and off Broadway, everything you need to know in the world of theater. Go to PerformingArtsInsider.com to find out how you can subscribe or get even just a single issue to check it out. And finally, our final, sponsor.
Least.
What would that be, Jeff?
It is least, actually.
It is least, but we can give him a mention anyway.
That would be the Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Fancy schmancy balloons.
Well, he says that with such great enthusiasm.
Well, I've been sick.
Jeff is fancy schmancy balloons.
Were you robbed?
I'm under the helium, as it were.
He was robbed.
I was robbed.
For all your party decorating needs.
I had a new house, and it was robbed.
Robbed. little reference to last week, in case people were listening.
And 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, right. So I think, yes, we've covered our sponsors. Let me also tell everybody.
We didn't get fancy schmancy. Quite the promo we would want.
Well, give out your phone number real quick. We have to move. We have a lot to do.
516-797-3229.
One more time.
Why don't you say it? Because I have a hard time.
Yeah, what's with your throat, man?
I don't know. I told you I'm not feeling that well.
Oh, great. 516.
You still come here with coffee.
569 55 Wait, no, that's 797-3229, area code 516-797-3229 for fancy schmancy balloons.
Carol Channing has rattled Dave Lefkowitz yet again.
I robbed him! Now, if you want to watch Performing Arts Insider,
that's eerie.
Actually, I was going to do Shalom Dammit that way. Well, anyway, Rabbi Saul Solomon's weekly television show is on Channel 20 of Cablevision of Woodbury, Long Island. That's the Cablevision that most people get around here if they get Cablevision. So, 7:30 in the morning on Wednesdays, Channel 20, Shalom Dammit with Rabbi Saul Solomon.
And don't forget to see how our show is done live. You can watch... What is it, Thursday morning?
Friday mornings at 7:30. We only have a couple of episodes of those. I've gotten a little lazy on getting those done. But Friday mornings at 7:30, it's Dave's Gone By on TV.
It's so nice, Dave, to see that you have a TV show that is all of four episodes repeated constantly.
I know. Well, I'm a busy, busy boy. Also, by the way, you can still get 25 older episodes of Dave's Gone By free anytime going to your computer at dgb.theateronline.com. The main thing is don't put in the www. You have to leave off the www. It's just dgb.theateronline.com for 25 free episodes of Dave's Gone By.
Why are they not on the World Wide Web?
They're just on the HTTP. It's this weird secondary server thing, but it's there and they sound great.
Appropriate for a secondary show.
Yeah, pretty much. Thank you very much. All right, what's going to be on this not secondary, not tertiary, but primary episode of Dave's Gone By? Well, inside Broadway, we're going to do our usual news and events of what's happening on and off the stages of Broadway. I'm also going to be talking a little bit about a show that I saw on Monday night, but very little because I don't have that much to say about it. I have a lot more to talk about on the experience of going to that show, and I'll do that on Inside Broadway. Also, Sheldon Harnick returns to the neighborhood. He is the lyricist for such Broadway classics as She Loves Me, Tenderloin, Fiorello, The Rothschilds, and, of course, Fiddler on the Roof, as well as The Apple Tree, come to think of it. So, I mean, such a legacy that this man has left on Broadway, and he's far from done yet. And we had a wonderful time talking with him last week. He's back for part two, Sheldon Harnick, tonight on Dave's Gone By. Also, I'm just going to take a couple of minutes now to tell you what happened to me on Friday night. I was sort of invited to be
robbed.
A guest. I was robbed.
I will never get old.
Invited guest on a radio station with, 49 times the wattage of this one. This is 50,000 watt station called WOR. We're one of the oldest stations in the country. They're older than we are, about 2 years older than WGBB. And
much richer.
There's an overnight show called Joey Reynolds, and he goes back quite a ways in radio, but he's been on OR for a couple of years, and he does...
He knew Alexander Graham Bell.
Did he really?
Yes,
he babysat Alexander Graham Bell. That's how old he is. So he has this thing on Friday nights, the first hour of his overnight that he does is the Shabbos hour. It's a very Jewish free-for-all thing where he's got all these different weird guests who kind of hang with him every week. So they're all very friendly. Sorry?
You're not supposed to work on Shabbos.
Well, I know, that's the irony of it. But I'll tell you something. Number one, the main thing is that he caters. So there's deli.
You were there in studio?
All sorts of food. Well, yeah. The funny thing is it's a neat studio.
They moved a couple years ago.
I'm sorry?
They moved the studio they're in now, I think it's new.
Because, Dave, there's something called professional.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. They're in this beautiful building. It's
no
on Trinity, that Trinity area downtown near Wall Street. But you know what? When you get into the room, and nicer a little bit than here, but it's a table with microphones and a booth behind it. It really is not. It's just, that's
radio
all
studio.
Radio is.
Yeah.
It's a little nice, so there isn't so much stuff on the walls, but that's all. And it's a bunch of people, and more people than microphones, just like here sometimes. So my problem was they sat me next to a guy named Mickey Freeman, who was, this will tell you something, he was a character on the Sergeant Bilko show with Phil Silvers back in the 1950s. And he's there every week just to tell horrible, bad, stupid jokes. No offense to him.
Did you laugh at
he's
any
He's adorable.
Of them?
Well, of course you laugh at
You
him.
Have to.
Every
respect.
Once in a while he's funny. Yeah. And he's a sweet guy, sweet little guy. looks
so I
like
guess he'll be appearing on this show soon.
Well, why not? You know, he literally he keeps these little index cards with these handwritten jokes on them, and it doesn't matter what anybody else is talking about. If he'll pluck a moment out to tell one of the jokes.
Speaking of Carol Channing,
exactly. He will be completely off. And he'll say, you know, if you're trying to say something about your train of thought. He'll suddenly be like, I was on a train the other day. The conductor said to me, it was like, oh, God. But he's there. Then
what did the conductor say?
Sounds like you're going to be on the Tony Reynolds show pretty soon, too. So I'm like in that room, and Sidney Meier is there. He owns, I think, Don't Tell Mama and a couple of cabaret clubs, and he's there every week. And then they've got a bunch of people there who are regulars. So
Jerry
I'm
Reynolds
thrown
like,
into this lion's den. What?
Isn't he like 180 years old?
I have to say, very soft-spoken guy. He looks probably older than he is because, as he will freely admit, he wasted 20 years of his life mainlining anything he could put up his nose or in his arms.
Huh.
But he's
you can huck cocaine?
I guess I don't know. But anyway,
I should really start reading more.
I mean, he doesn't look like the healthiest man, but he looks like a guy who at least straightened out.
I've heard that he's actually quite demure in person.
Absolutely, yeah. He probably wasn't that way 15, 20 years ago. He's a
right.
different guy.
He's obviously mellow.
Very sweet. Very, yeah. very courteous. I mean, he made sure, even though it was a free-for-all.
Almost meek.
When he knew I was sort of sitting back and just watching everybody go blah, blah, he would say, now, Dave, if Dave's gone by, tell us what you... I mean, he made sure to do that, which was very mentioned.
How did you get on the show?
Oh,
did they reach out to you?
Big thank you to a press agent that I know who's really, really nice, Penny Landau, from Maya Associates. Just, you know, she's friends with... Joey's manager person. Yeah, Penny was great.
This
and she said, well, let me get you on the show. And she did, and I thank her for that. And I think I did pretty well. They asked me back. No specific time. So I'm sure they say that to everybody who doesn't disgrace themselves.
Please come back when you're 100.
Yeah, exactly. But they also did not say it, which I thought was kind of nice. And I think on some level I did some
they
good stuff.
They didn't say, boy, you are horrible. Go home.
Yeah, no, they did not. Although they didn't ask me back for the second hour either.
Was
so.
The food good?
Well, it was deli. They had this big deli platter. I didn't have it. There was chopped liver, too.
Was there coffee?
Very nice experience. Yes, there was coffee.
I will come back next Sunday night if Jeff brings coffee.
What?
Ooh. Joe has promised to come back to the studio if you're in person and you bring coffee.
We can turn
it
this into like
a... date show? I thought that was all private.
What? I'm sorry, I missed that.
I think we all missed that.
A little date joke there.
I think he missed it, too. We can turn this into like a Joey Reynolds show.
Or a date rape.
Hey, as long as I get coffee, I don't really care.
Oh, okay.
Do what you want.
You heard him, Jeff. This is your chance.
Cream in that coffee?
Fresh 22-year-old meat. Or are you 23?
23.
23-year-old like cream in that coffee?
Well, yeah.
You can rob the Italian cradle, Jeff. There we go.
Oh,
God, I hope my parents don't listen to this.
Oh, go on.
Oh, you were robbed.
Robbing.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have to continue with this show.
Do we really?
Unfortunately,
we're forced to.
We have Sheldon.
You know, we're forced by the gospel people to do this.
Yeah. Otherwise, we could roll on for like 5-10 minutes after. Well, we do anyway. Usually, not that that's pretty welcome here, but thrilled to be here every Sunday night on Dave's Gone By. Happy to have Joe Salzone in the studio, Jeff on the phone, and coming up on the phone in just a minute or two.
I was robbed.
No, not Carol Channing. Another Broadway legend. Sheldon Harnick, don't go away.
Moby Dick, Ulysses, War and Peace, the Bible. Big freaking deal. If you want to read a real book, a funny book, try Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, a collection of comedies by Dave Lefkowitz, me, the host of Dave's Gone By. Each play is stage-tested and relatively safe for public consumption. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, available from Holvo Books on the Dave's Gone By website. It's the great American something. We're talking with Sheldon Harnick here in the neighborhood, the lyricist, and sometimes you do obviously a whole lot more, especially these days. You're doing the music, the lyrics, and the book.
And the adaptation.
And the adaptation.
For the Molière piece.
Pretty soon you'll be building the sets, I guess. Or maybe your wife will do that.
That's what she'll do. I have no visual talents at all.
But let's now get to, if you don't mind, the two big shows that you may most be known for. I don't think that's you would
I
mind
think that's
that.
True. Oh,
yeah.
Sure, that's true.
Now, She Loves Me, which is a lovely, lovely show based on Little Shop Around the Corner. Whose idea was it to get involved in that, to adapt it, and to
there was I'm pretty sure he's no longer with us, but he was a producer named Larry Kasha. And he got the rights to it and contacted Jerry Bach and myself, and both of us knew the film and loved it. And he said that the book writer he wanted to use was a man named Joe Masteroff.
Oh.
And both Jerry and I had seen a play by Joe Masteroff. I can't remember the title. It didn't run very long, but it starred Julie Harris. We had seen it and really admired it. So we said, absolutely. And then we had a funny problem. The director we wanted was Gower Champion.
Hmm.
And Al Kasha went to Gower Champion, and Gower said, oh, I would love to do it, but I can't. I have a prior commitment. So Jerry Bach and I said, let's take it to Hal Prince. Hal has been a wonderful producer for us, but we also know him as a very gifted director. We had seen something he had done. Well, he had come in to try and fix a show, A Family Affair, I think it was called. And he'd come very close to it. His work was wonderful. We had also seen, he had directed, I think, for the Theater Guild, a production of the straight play, The Matchmaker.
Hmm.
Anyway, we recommended him, and Al Kasha had a meeting with him, and he said, yes, this is a good idea. So we got Hal. I think the day after we had met with Hal and said yes, I don't think he had a contract yet, Kasha had a call from Gower Champion.
Oy.
Saying, I'm now available again. And we thought, we can't do this to Hal. We must go with him. And so we chose to go with him, and he came through for us. He was wonderful to work with. The show, for some reason, when we've had many, many postmortems, the show didn't quite work. We got terrific reviews, but after about 6 months, we noticed that business was gradually falling off. It only ran between 9.5 and 10 months, which was heartbreaking for all of us.
Yeah.
And I think for the next year, there were no productions. And then there'd be a production here, a production there, and Jerry Bach and I and Joe Masteroff would get letters from the cast saying, we don't understand why this show didn't work on Broadway. Our audiences love it. And little by little, it became what they called a cult show. And then in 1993, I think it was, Scott Ellis directed a new production for the Roundabout Theater. And
right.
That catapulted the show into the mainstream because the reviews were such love letters that suddenly it was being done all over the country. So that was a long time coming, but it was wonderful.
Was that Sally Mays? Who was
she? She was in it, yeah.
And
originally it was Judy Kuhn.
Right.
And Judy got married and left the show to be with her husband. And we had Diane Fratton-Tony and Boyd Gaines, who was in it. He won a Tony for
yeah.
it. It was a lovely production.
It was pretty terrific. And then, well, that was 1963.
That was 1993. The first production was 63 with
right.
Barbara Cook, yeah.
Dear friend, I am so sorry about last night. It was a nightmare in every way. But together you and I will laugh at last night someday. Ice cream. He brought me ice cream, vanilla ice cream. Imagine that. Wonders never cease. It's been a most peculiar day. Will wonders never cease? Will wonders never cease? Oh, where was I? I am so sorry about last night. It was a nightmare in every way, but together you and I will have last night someday. I sat there waiting in that cafe and never guessing that you were fat. That you were near. You were outside looking bald. Oh, my.
dear friend. I am so sorry about last night. Last night, I was so nasty. Well, he deserved it, but even so, that George is not like this George. This is a new George that I don't know. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, for right before my eyes, a man that I despise has turned into a man I like. It's almost like a dream, and strange as it may seem, he came to offer me.
So if we go back there, then 1 year later, what I would consider, and perhaps I'm a little biased religiously, but for me the greatest Broadway musical of all time.
I think you could say that.
Even in
I'm a little biased too.
Well, yeah, I mean there's just something about Fiddler on the Roof.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's Jerry Robbins. And this is the reason I say that. When Jerry agreed to do the show, to direct and choreograph the show, he told us a story. He said at the age of 6, he had been taken to Europe, to that area, Russia, Poland, I've forgotten exactly where, but that's where his forebears came from. So his folks took him there on a nostalgic trip, and he said, it was very emotional, even for a kid of 6. And, of course, Robbins must have been a very sensitive child of 6. But he always remembered that visit. During World War II, when he realized that little villages, little shtetls like the one he had visited, were being wiped out, he was horrified. He thought the place that he visited was probably one of them. Well, along comes Joe Stein and Jerry Bach and myself, and we say, would you direct our show? And Jerry said to him, this was an opportunity to put that shtetl life, give that shtetl life an additional life of maybe 25 years by recreating it on the theatrical stage. So that, in my opinion, he was like a man obsessed. That was his mission, to put that life as vividly on stage as he could. And he worked like a demon.
Well, let me ask, the concept of the show ending with the Jews being forced out of Anatevka, was that a Robbins idea that tied it in, or was that already there from...
No, that's...
It wasn't Shalom Aleichem, or was it?
Oh, yeah, that's in Shalom Aleichem.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're forced out. Having Tevye go to America was our idea. In the original book, I think he goes to Palestine. But those shows were written long before the Holocaust, and I can't help but think that if Shalom Aleichem had lived long enough to experience the Holocaust, he too might have had his principal characters going off to America, as well as Palestine.
When you and Bach and Stein started collaborating on Fiddler, at what point did you realize it was special? It wasn't just a show or a good show or anything. When did you realize, oh my God,
tell you exactly when we realized, because at first we were scared to death. Harold Prince was our sole producer on... No, he wasn't, as a matter of fact. We had first taken it to a television producer. I'm blocking on his name right now, but he was very gifted. We loved his work, and he said he would do it. And then it turned out he was having emotional problems, and nothing was getting done. Jerome Robbins would take his time deciding who he wanted as a set designer or who he wanted as the lighting designer. And when he made his choice, then these people would call and say, hey, we have no contract. Well, he got very worried, and he was justifiably worried because, as I say, the producer, maybe it's just as well, I can't remember his name, was having problems. So Jerry went to help Prince. And although Hal had been our first, the first person we took it to, he didn't think it was right for him, but with Jerry Robbins involved, he said, yes, I will be your producer. And he was terrific. But he got us our out-of-town tryout in Detroit, and he said the managers of the Fisher Theater got him to accept a less-than-perfect deal. We had a subscription for 3.5 weeks, but they insisted that we stay in Detroit for 5 weeks. So we had a subscription for 3.5 weeks, and we thought if we get bad reviews, we could die there because nobody will buy tickets for the last week and a half. We have to be there. Then when we got to Detroit, we found something even more worrisome. Talk about reviews. There was a newspaper strike. So we didn't get any reviews.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we were scared to death. What's going to happen? Well, by the end of the 3.5 weeks, thank God, we were doing about 90% business. By the time we closed, we were selling out.
And this is Detroit, which
is
not exactly a hub of Judaism.
Yeah, this is Detroit. So we at that time, we didn't know we had anything special, but at least we thought, well, there's maybe it's Zero Mostel, whatever it is, there's something about the show that people like. Where we knew we had something special was when we went from Detroit to Washington, D.C. That was our next stop on the pre-Broadway tryout. And mind you, there'd been no reviews. And yet, when we got to Washington, we were astonished to see long lines at the box office before we opened, waiting to buy tickets. And we thought, my God, everybody in Detroit must have phoned their relatives and said, hey, you got to see this show. And we looked at each other and said, hey, there is something special about this show. Then the same thing happened when we got to New York. There were long lines at the box office. And I thought to myself, correctly as it turned out, this may be the only show I ever do where I don't have to worry about the critical response. And that was just as well because people think we got raves. We didn't. We got very mixed notices with, I think, one rave in the daily papers.
Huh.
And that was all.
Oh, I don't know. I recall there's a book of compiled reviews. I think Stephen Susskind put together a couple of them. And I think if you go through that, I wouldn't say you got panned. You might want to look those over again.
There was one, I can't, it's hard to call it a pan because it had some praiseworthy things in it, but it was Walter Kerr. His review ended by saying, too bad, near miss.
So, oh, well, too bad, right?
And the whoever was reviewing in the New York Times said, oh, what a show this could have been if they had Ernst Bloch do the music, or failing him, maybe Leonard Bernstein.
It
was damning us with faint praise. Or praising us with faint dams, whichever way it works.
I think the audiences have won. Well, also the critics have obviously warmed to it over the years as well.
Well, they have, all except for Ben Brantley. At our last revival, he should have recused himself because he made it very clear in his review that he didn't like the lyrics he called clumsy, the music he called sticky pudding, and I can't remember how he described Joe Stein's book. He doesn't like the show. He shouldn't have reviewed it.
Well, if he's clear that he doesn't like the show to begin with, and he's upfront about it, he has every right to review it. I mean, that's just his bias.
I suppose. I suppose. I don't think so, but I suppose so.
I mean, and if you look at someone like John Simon, who has called it one of the great musicals of all, and he's mellowed over the years a bit, but he's even in that last revival, he was saying, "Oh, yeah, this show is extraordinary."
Yeah, we got actually on the last revival, we had better reviews in the big magazines. Time, New Yorker, New York Magazine, so forth. Those were better than the dailies. But some of the dailies were pretty good.
Ow, ow, ow! I slipped a disc! That is, I slipped a disc into my CD player, and it's a Dave's Gone By CD. That's right, we have literally a couple of hundred Dave's Gone By episodes on compact disc for you to purchase and listen to any time you want. They make a great gift, they're fun, they're funny, well, at least I think so. Find out more at my website, davesgoneby.org, and start listening to Dave and slipping your discs.
Hi, this is Sheldon Harnick. And you're listening to Dave's Gone By on station WGBB.
Now, I don't quite want to leave Fiddler quite just yet, because I just want to go back into that milieu. I'm wondering, what was the biggest fight that you guys had, creatively, over the show? Was it with Jerome Robbins about the staging? Was there a song that somebody wanted in, and somebody else said, no, the show's already too long, and we can do this with a line of dialogue instead? What was, like, the argument?
We didn't have any really big fights. Jerome Robbins takes charge. We learned very early on that this was going to be his show, because at one point we had many pre-production meetings, and Jerry wanted to do something which neither Joe Stein nor Jerry Bakken nor I approved of. So one day we had our meeting with him, and we said, Jerry, we want you to do the show the way Joe has written the scene. This is the way it must be. And Robbins thought for a minute, and he said, okay, I'm sure your next director will be very happy to do that.
Well, yeah, he had a pull rank, you know.
Yeah, and with the idea that he might leave us, we collapsed, and wisely so, because he really knew what he was doing. So that's as close as we came to an argument. There were other moments. Oh, for instance, we had a song in the first act for Huddle and Perchik. Was called If I Were a Woman. If You Were a Woman. No, If I Were a Woman, right, that started out with Perchik singing. It was a long song, it was about 4 minutes, and it worked. It was terrific. So we thought, you know, when we first saw it in front of an audience, we thought, good, that's not a problem, that song works. Well, while we were in Detroit, I think it was, Robbins came to us, and he said, I want to cut that song. We said, what are you talking about? That the song works. He said, I know it works, but I think I can, but it's a long song, and it's a long show. And I think I can accomplish the same thing that the song accomplishes in 30 seconds of dance.
Hmm.
And being Robbins, we thought, well, okay. And he said, look, if it doesn't work, we'll go back to the song. So we didn't argue. He tried it, and he did accomplish it. In 30 seconds, what he did was even better than the song. It showed so much. It was funny. It was touching. And it was exciting to watch the dancing. He was, you know, he was brilliant.
Yeah.
The biggest problem we had was his problem. And he's the one who solved it. In rehearsal, we saw what he had constructed. It was from the moment when Golda comes on stage to tell Tevye that Chava has run off with the Russian. She has married out of the faith. What Robbins had constructed was like a like an expressionistic 8 or 10 minute sequence where Tevye goes through the town looking for Chava, and he goes here, and he goes there, and he goes to talk to the priest. And as he's doing all this, the set is getting more and more distorted, almost like a German expressionistic movie. The lighting is becoming more dramatic, reds and greens. And I thought it was absolutely, when we saw it in dress rehearsal, I thought, this is brilliant. When we tried it in front of an audience, they were stunned. They almost didn't respond. And we had a meeting afterwards, and Jerry said, anybody know what's wrong? We said, no. He said, maybe it's too long. So he began to trim it. And every time he took a little more out, the response began to grow.
Uh-huh.
And as he took more out, it grew more and more. Jerry Bock said, hey, maybe if he kills the whole thing, it'll stop the show. You know. And finally, what was left was just 3 minutes, which is still in the show, where the three daughters... In dance, the three daughters meet their three suitors and go off, leaving Tevye.
Oh, yeah.
And what Robbins finally figured out, he said the whole show is naturalistic in style. And here in the second act, I introduced something that was expressionistic in style. It was so out of key, the audience didn't know what to make of it. And he said, and they were right, and I was wrong.
Well, the expressionism worked a little in the dream sequence, but the audience went with it there.
They went with it there because it was comic.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
And also because it was a dream, and in a dream you can do just about anything.
What's black and white and red all over? Photocopies made at Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Any job that you have, including black and white copies, and they've got a brand new color copier, great quality, good prices, wonderful family that has owned Hewlett Minuteman Press since the 1970s. So check them out, 516-569-5577, Hewlett Minuteman Press. They're the kings.
Hi, this is Sheldon Harnick, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on station WGBB.
All I can say is... First of all, thank you so much for creating a show like Fiddler on the Roof. I mean, do you
thank
still...
you. It was Jerry Robbins, between Jerry and Hal Prince, they had Joe Stein and Jerry Bach and myself working at the peak of our abilities, I do believe.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, I don't think there's a question about that. Not that your abilities are impeded in any way 40 years later, 45 years later, and happy to have you still working. Have a couple more questions for Sheldon Harnick before we let you go.
Okay.
Because I want to ask about a couple of other shows. First of all, it may not have been a happy or successful experience, but you did work on a show with Richard Rodgers.
I did.
And?
What was happy about it was getting to know Rodgers and getting to work with him, because I fell in love with the man. Just before we went into rehearsal, we had to postpone because Rodgers was suddenly taken to the hospital. I had a call from our producer, another songwriter, Richard Adler. He called and he said, Rodgers has been taken to the hospital to have his larynx removed. He has cancer of the larynx. And we thought, oh my God, that's the end of the show. But Rodgers was such a gallant man, such a fighter. As soon as the operation was over, he went to a special school to learn laryngeal speech. He learned how to speak laryngeally, which is not easy, and then we went back into rehearsal. And I mean, we didn't go back into rehearsal, we went into rehearsal. And throughout, I began to appreciate his gallantry and his sense of humor. I thought he was just wonderful. Unfortunately, he had had a stroke, and I learned later through a doctor that the stroke impaired his ability to think abstractly, so that he could not write music first. You know, part of his legend was that with Larry Hart, all the music came first. When he worked with Hammerstein, Hammerstein constructed the lyrics first, and then Rodgers would write the music. But with me, he could not literally write music first, so every lyric had to come first, and that was difficult. The difficulty in the show...
But, by the way, the show is called Rex.
It's called Rex.
Yeah.
The difficulty, and there were a couple of difficulties. One was simply our leading man, Nickel Williamson, who is, he can be trouble in the show. He's wonderful. He's a brilliant actor, and it turns out he's a terrific musician. But he came to feel that he wasn't right for the show. And he really was so unhappy that it made a lot of problems. We also, afterwards, let me tell the story this way.
Sure.
25 years after the show opened and closed all too quickly, Sherman Yellen and I had a call from James Morgan, who runs the York Theater. And he wanted to do the show there in concert as one of those five performance musicals and Mufti's shows.
Mm-hmm.
And Sherman and I said, why do we want to do that? We made so many mistakes. Let's not see it up on its feet again. And then Sherman said, hey, ask him if he will allow us to reinvestigate the show and maybe do it a year from now. And Morgan said, take your time. Whenever you're ready, I'll do it. Well, we reinvestigated the show, and after 25 years, we were able to spot the mistakes very easily. We redid the show. We had our five performances, and they were received very enthusiastically. The following year, we had a full production at Findlay University in Ohio, where, again, it was received enthusiastically. And then last summer, a little theater in Chicago called Theater Building Chicago used it in a concert version as their benefit. They did two performances of it, and it was the best yet. Sherman and I were there. We made some more changes. And after the show, people from the audience came up, and instead of saying, hey, I enjoyed it, they said, you know something? It's wonderful.
Oh.
So Rodgers and Hammerstein, which handles it, is now prepared for the first time to start licensing it.
Cool.
Who
knows?
We really recouped.
That's wonderful. I don't know the show, but as I said, all those shows from back then with such talented people, even now, shows that have tremendously talented people and are actually pretty good but just may not click. You bring them back 20, 25, 30 years later, and then you're like, hey, these are still terrific.
Right. I saw a beautiful example of that in this last tribute to Joe Stein at the York Theater. One of the shows they did was Enter Laughing.
Well, So Long 124th Street was...
So Long 124th Street, which had a very short run on Broadway. It was Bobby Morse, and it was a big flop. Well, he changed the name. He did a little rewriting, but not much. But again, they had the right cast and the right director, and it was wonderful. It was so good, in fact, that the York hopes to be able to produce it as one of their full-scale productions, not a concert production.
Oh,
it
terrific.
Was wonderful.
And, again, before I let you go, we talked about your working with Richard Rodgers, and you had obviously wonderful things to say. You did two different shows with Michel Legrand, and I'm wondering about your relationship working with him.
He's wonderful to work with. He is so gifted. What I did learn was that it's, for me, it was better for him to let him write the music first. I think the reason is that although he speaks wonderful English and he's a very intelligent, well-read guy, because English is still a second language for him, if I gave him a lyric first, I could not depend on the fact that he would understand all the nuances of English, so that the lyric might be set in an odd way. So I learned that it was wiser to let him write music first and then do the lyrics to the music, and then the accents would all be in the right places.
Huh.
But we did a Christmas Carol together, and every Christmas we have, I don't know, we have a number of performances. It's a seasonal show, but that gets done. I translated The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and that gets the occasional performance, too.
Cool. What do you think of the, quote-unquote, the new guard of Broadway composers and lyricists, people like William Finn or Adam Gettle or David Yazbek? Are they too much success too soon, or are they really great?
I think Adam Gettle is great, and I don't use that word often, but what he accomplished in Light in the Piazza, I think, was extraordinary. It's such a moving, beautiful score. It's not a traditional theater score, and there are people who would have to hear the score a couple times before they would accept it as a musical comedy. But it's a wonderful, wonderful score. Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty are very gifted. From Ragtime on, their shows are always intelligent, always worth seeing. David Yazbek, I have to confess, I didn't care for his second show, but the first one, I thought his score was wonderful. The
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, or...
No, that was the second one.
Oh, well, I love Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
The one about the men who take off their clothes.
Full Monty.
Yes, the Full Monty. I thought that was wonderful. I had occasion the other day to listen to Spring Awakening, and I think the music to that is simply beautiful. The lyrics are done in a kind of style that I'm not really that familiar with, and they both know the rock literature inside and out, and I think that's affected the lyrics so that I'm not as comfortable with them, but the music is really beautiful.
What would you say, then, if you had to pick a couple of musicals of all time that weren't yours, what would they be, the greatest musicals?
Oh, Chorus Line, I think, is surely one. I saw the production of it not too long ago, and I think that is... The construction of that show is absolutely astonishing. It's just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I think both The King and I and Carousel are both extraordinary shows, and Guys and Dolls. And there are others, but those come to mind immediately.
Is it for all the usual obvious reasons, or do you have a special take or slant on some of these?
No, I think they're somehow the writers who were doing the shows got inspired, so that both the book, the lyrics, and the scores for those shows are all top-notch, and they all mesh in an incredible way. I think inspiration is behind it, because the same writers have done other shows which had craft, which had intelligence, and were good, but were maybe not inspired. But those shows are inspired.
And, speaking of inspiration and stuff, the one thing that I want to broach rather delicately is that you lost your brother about a year ago.
Yes, February will be a year anniversary, and what Jay was doing with his children's theater was just wonderful. We were so proud of him, so proud of what he accomplished. When he and his partner, Charlie Hull, who handled the business side of things, when they left TheaterWorks USA, when they retired, they made sure they got extremely capable people to follow them, and it's been a joy to me to read the reviews, the successive reviews of new shows that the new people have put on, so that the organization that Jay and Charlie founded is still going strong.
That's great. And did you ever work with him on a show?
I never was able to. I was always busy doing something else.
Do you regret that?
I do regret it, yeah. But what was very moving was that when he died, I never had so many letters from so many people who had worked with Jay. And so many of them said, he gave me my first job. You know, people like Audra McDonald or people like Michael Mayer, who directed Spring Awakening, or the conductor who, our second conductor on the recent revival of the Apple Tree. They all said he was wonderful to work with, his humor, his patience, his talent. It was very moving to me to read those letters.
Wow. And, well, all I can say is that you certainly have inspired a lot of people with your lyrics and with the shows that you have done. And I just hope that continues. I hope they do.
Me too.
And that they bring back shows like Rex and some other things that, that may not have worked the first time or may not have clicked the first time, as well as the wonderful Chestnuts and Perennials that you've done and the new shows that
thank
you're working
you so,
on now.
Thank you so very much.
So Sheldon Harnick, thank you for being in the neighborhood.
You're welcome, and it was wonderful to talk to you.
In my own lifetime, I want to see the fighting cease. In my own lifetime, I want to see my sons enjoy the fruits of peace. While I'm still here, I want to know, beyond a doubt, that no one can lock us in or lock us out. We have climbed higher, much higher than I thought we'd climb. It's a long journey, and even though the end's in sight, there's not much time. I want to know, we haven't built on sand. In my own lifetime. Inside
Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Yes, we go inside Broadway and off Broadway on Dave's Gone By, thanks to the good graces of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. I'm Dave Lefkowitz here with Joe Salzone in the studio. I've seen a couple of Broadway shows over the years, but the real Broadway fan here, besides me, of course, is also on the phone with us, my wonderful guest co-host, Jeff Goodman, who's coughing in the background. Poor guy. So
he's a good poll.
That's
I'm sorry,
right.
Dave.
You ever been polled? Are you there?
Yes.
Good. We're going to the news. We're going to do that quickly because I have a story to tell about an off-Broadway sojourn I took earlier in the week.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that study in England.
It has nothing like my sojourn to the theater.
What was that, very quickly?
Where I got my cold.
Oh, no, that was on the subway, you said.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but I'm saying this was my experience in the theater. But anyway, let's just tell people what the theater news is this week, including The Country Girl has set its Broadway date at the Bernard Jacobs Theater.
Who can't wait for Clifford Odets' new revival?
Well, no one was waiting for the William Inge show either, Come Back Little Sheba, but people were happy to see Esapetha Merkerson on Broadway, and she does a lovely job, and it's
this
a nice play.
True.
So here's The Country Girl, and dig the cast of, do you know the cast of The Country Girl?
I do, but I can't remember it.
Oh, it's Morgan Freeman and Frances McDormand.
That's
I got serious, and also Peter Gallagher. So that's pretty darn good, and it's a pretty, you know, what is that noise?
That's my computer. I'm trying to get a computer, a theater site up. So
sounds like a jailhouse harmonica.
What?
That.
Or at least a bathhouse harmonica.
So anyway, Country Girl is coming. It's opening April 27th at the Bernard Jacobs Theater on Broadway. Also, eyeing Broadway, not this season, but probably next, according to the New York Post, is a revival of Brigadoon. which should be interesting. They've got John Guare writing or revising the original book on that. So have you ever seen Brigadoon in production? I have not.
Yes, I have.
And does it still work?
Well,
or possibly?
Sort of. It's a very old-fashioned mythical musical.
Okay. And it's who am I forgetting? It's Yip Harburg, right? And who's the authors? I forgot my notes at home on this segment, so I don't remember who wrote Brigadoon. But I think it was Harburg. Anyway, and Lane, maybe. Little bit of extra Broadway news, not necessarily happy news. A show that was supposed to come to Broadway in the spring, a one-person show, called The Female of the Species, will not.
Because they can't get a theater.
They can't get a theater, but also their star, Annette Bening, dropped out a little while ago.
Oh.
So that didn't help either. I'm assuming if they had Annette Bening, they would have a theater, but they don't have either. So it's quote-unquote postponed. Whether we'll see it at all is to be determined, but I'm afraid the female of the species has been X'd out chromosomally.
And Bening's.
Bening's. She's in her final Bening. Oh, I don't know what that means. Anyway, no. Nah. There's no pun to be made there. So, Jeff, do you want to do the quick Rent news?
Oh, as if the closing of Rent on Broadway wasn't sad enough, It turns out that the London production of Rent decided to close early, and then they decided to close yesterday.
Oh, wow, so that's very, very... They must have been doing no business down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, well, you know, Rent, originally when it opened, didn't do well in London. So this was the revised revival, and what they did is they actually rewrote some of the characters because they felt it was going to make it more...
Anglophilic. They put three English expatriates.
They changed three of the characters to be English expatriates living in America.
But it still apparently didn't catch on. So yeah. Rent, which will be closing in New York in June, so you know you still have a couple of months to catch it. But this is the second longest running show on Broadway.
And you know when's the best time to see it?
When?
There's no day but today.
Aw. Jeff, the big Rent fan here on Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By.
I love Rent.
Got to do a little commercial, and then I'll be back to talk about a show that I saw this week off Broadway. Don't go away.
Let's start at the very beginning.
Whether you're at the very beginning, the middle, or the end of the Broadway season, everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance is in the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Available 21 times a year or just in the monthly edition, either way, Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off. So subscribe now to Performing Arts Insider and find out all the information at PerformingArtsInsider.com.
I'll make it easier for you.
Thank you for making it easier for us, Rebecca Luker, on this edition of Dave's Gone By. Inside, well, kind of off-Broadway.
Well,
I went
before we get to that, you'd be terribly remiss if you didn't mention one little slightly sad thing that happened this week as well.
Oh, my gosh, you're right. Thank you. What did happen?
That would be Hal Prince had a very minor stroke the other day on his 80th birthday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone has now said... And he's going to be 100% soon. So I'm sure you, as well as I, send our very best wishes to Hal Prince for a speedy and full recovery.
And by the way, he of course, was the director of Fiddler on the Roof, or just the producer. I'm forgetting that. But there's a Harnett connection there as well. So anyway, I wanted to tell real, real quick about a show... I don't even really have time to tell it. It's 11:57, and we're going to have to wrap up anyway. So let me get to commercials, and I'll save that for Inside Broadway next week. Although I will say avoid a show called Deathbed, and I'll explain why next week. Although do run and see a show called Runt of the Litter that's playing off-Broadway as well.
Oh, yeah, that's very good.
It is very good. But I'll save the real review stuff for next week. Let's... And Inside Broadway, and then we'll be back to end the show in just a moment.
Okay.
We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Do not adjust your set. There's a rabbi on it. Me! Every Wednesday morning at 7:30 on Cablevision Channel 20. I'm Rabbi Sol Solomon, spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And my TV show will tell you everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were too staggeringly ignorant to ask. Shalom Dem at 7:30 Wednesday morning on Channel 20 or anytime on YouTube.com. Your prostate will thank you.
Hi, this is Uncle Floyd. I hope you come to see me at the Dix Hills Center for the Performing Arts. That's at Five Towns College. I'll be there on Saturday night, February 16th.
Yes, that is the voice of the one and only Uncle Floyd Vivino. Why are we promoting his appearance at the Dix Hills Performing Arts Center on Saturday night, February 16th? Because Uncle Floyd is going to be an upcoming guest on Dave's Gone By in just a week or two. Joe is clapping, Jeff is coughing. So I'm real excited. I wish I could have gotten him on in time before his appearance, but at least I was able to promote.
Are you going to go see him at the performing arts?
I really want to. I would love to, because I haven't seen Uncle Floyd in years.
Have he offered you comp tickets?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Did he offer Days Gone By his listeners comp tickets?
We were too busy talking about a bunch of other stuff to go there, but he did offer me a chance to come see it, and so I would love.
I overheard the conversation. I didn't hear anything about me, so.
Oh, well.
I zoned out pretty quickly.
Well, if Dave was nice, he'd take you as a guest.
I'll be busy that night.
Really? You think so? Anyway,
yeah, I'll be at Sirius that night.
Oh, well, yeah. Seriously? Yeah.
Yes, yeah, seriously.
Anyway, we seriously have to end the show, so let's do the sponsors.
Some Gospel people are knocking at the door.
They're already here. They've knocked. They're ready and raring, so let's take one or two more minutes and finish the show so that we don't get kicked out of here. And,
we don't want to get God mad at us.
And nailed to crosses and stuff.
Yeah. You like that, though.
Thrown to lions, or, well, no, they do that to Christians. So anyway, well, then Joe, you might have that problem. I've just got the hammer and the nails and the wood.
Last I checked, I don't subscribe to that.
Okay, enough about that. Let's
so do the sponsors, Jeff.
Well, there's
MortgagesRock.com. Yeah. They help you get a mortgage or financing for a college loan or for a refi or whatever you want to do, or they'll teach you how to get that for your friends and family and neighbors as well. MortgagesRock.com. All the information is at the website. Fancy Schmancy.
MortgagesRock.com.
MortgagesRock.com. Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Jeff, quickly tell us about them, please.
Just call 516-797-3229. You'll get the party of your life.
Very, very good. 797-3229. Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway for more than 65 years. And by the way, I forgot to mention early in the show that Dave's Gone By listeners, special rate, you get a full year, 12 monthly issues.
For $49.95.
No, for $120, only $10 an issue, which is saving you quite a bit off the newsstand and the bookshop price. So go to performingartsinsider.com for more information about that, and my website, davesgoneby.org.
Of course, if you're going to read one magazine about theater, it should be Performing Arts Insider.
This is true. And our other sponsor that we do have to thank is Hewlett Minuteman Press.
The Happy Kings of Broadway.
Right next to
Filene's Shoes.
No, Filene's. That's the second week in a row you did that.
Loman Shoes.
Loman Shoes. 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Everybody, don't forget to watch Shalom Dammit Wednesday mornings at 7:30 on Channel 20 Long Island Cablevision. And
George,
by the way,
keep taking those pregnancy pills.
Yeah. And don't forget, YouTube.com has all the episodes of Shalom Dammit. You can watch them anytime you want to. If you want to get in touch with me, email davesgoneby@aol.com. Please check the website davesgoneby.org. I want to also promote the Jews of New York documentary. Part of the reason we got Sheldon Harnick is he's on there. So they've already shown it on TV, but you can get it starting April 1st on DVD for a $100 pledge to WLIW. And you can get more information at jewsofnewyork.org. And that's New York, N-E-W-Y-O-R-K, jewsofnewyork.org. Also want to give a shout-out to Jill Sobule, one of the beloved and lovely guests of this show. She's going to be at Joe's Pub tomorrow night at 9:30. Well, actually, it's tonight because it's 12:02 a.m. on WGBB Report.
Gospel awaits.
Gospel awaits, yes. But got to say hi to her. See her tomorrow night at Joe's Pub
tonight.
Or Thursday night, February 7th at 7 p.m., again at Joe's Pub.
It'll be wonderful.
Everybody listen to Fill Her Up Saturday nights at 5 on WGBB. That's my music show, Saturday nights at 5. Want to give big thank yous to my beloved and wonderful and adorable wife, who is so perfect for me, Joyce Weil. Want to thank Natasha at WLIW.
And don't forget to check into your new website. Dave's going to be at daddy.com.
Oh, stop it. Stop it, stop it. And Jeff is turning hetero.com, isn't it? Both of them are extremely unlikely, but there you go. Anyway, Natasha at WLIW Television, thank her so much for the Sheldon Harnick, for arranging all that. Thank you to Sheldon Harnick. Thank you to Joey Reynolds and to Myra and to Penny Landau for getting me on that radio show.
And don't forget the little guy you sat next to.
Oh, and Mickey Freeman, too. Well, he's kind of stole some of my thunder, but yeah, to Mickey Freeman, too. Anyway, in the coming weeks, we will have Uncle Floyd Vivino going to be on this show, and then we've got also Phil Mushnick, the New York Post writer, sports columnist, my favorite read, aside from Michael Regal, of course, in the New York Post, really, really terrific writer who comments on media and the way it approaches sports. He's going to be on the show, too. Exciting, wonderful guests on Dave's
Gone By. And
don't
forget, next week is our big Valentine's Day show.
That's right. I think Uncle Floyd's going to be next week because it's still before his gig in Dix Hills. So that'll work out great. We will be back next Sunday, February 10th, 2008, the Valentine's episode, even though it's not Valentine's Day. But it will be the 259th. Episode of Dave's Gone By.
It'll be our Heart On show.
Nicely put. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
Joe Salzone.
And
Jeff Goodman, the one who you forgot to thank.
What do you mean?
I wasn't thanked either, so don't worry.
Well, this is your thank you part. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
He looked at me when he was discussing his wife, so I wasn't too sure if he was going to introduce me as his lovely and talented wife. Or you know,
in my dreams.
Well, you too could be pregnant.
I was robbed. I was robbed.
Robbed the cradle.
So this is again Dave Lefkowitz.
Joe Salzone.
And
the ever popular Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night. Go Giants.
And Gone By.